This area is actually one of the first areas where black residents began to settle in the early 1900s. Philip A. Payton is known as the father of Harlem because he worked in a bunch of buildings that had white residences as a manager and tried to manage buildings with black tenants. Didn't really exist. Then he met a man who had a rival, another building owner. They really didn't get along. And this guy thought that as a way to get back at his rival, he'd rent out the entire building to African Americans to like really piss him off. So he hired Philip A. Payton to manage this building. And sure enough, he filled it with black tenants, which pissed off the rival, pissed off the neighbors also. Eventually, more and more, Philip A. Payton started his own real estate company. I got the name for you. It is the Afro-American Realty Company. Started that in 1904. And once he did, he was able to purchase properties and invite black tenants to move in. Didn't really go over well with the white neighbors. They eventually began to move out, and gradually, Harlem became what it is today, as people moved more and more into the neighborhood. He was the father of Harlem.
And again, just as we can keep going over and over again, as the dynamic is changing here, that has repercussions. And I know, like, we talked a lot about the gentrification of Brooklyn and the gentrification of Harlem that's been going on as well, makes it why even our presence in some ways ruffle some feathers
it really frightens people that are in a neighborhood, because when you live in a neighborhood and you're comfortable there, especially it's your home,
it's your parents' home, it's your grandparents' home.
Yeah. When you see all these buildings going up, you're tearing down, you know, history. That building that we just saw, that where Connie's was, to me is very ugly. When you look around at these buildings with, you know, architecture like this,
beautiful,
and then you put up
Yes.
And you throw up a building that's all steel and glass in an historic neighborhood, to me that's very ugly. When you see that coming, you see that your neighborhood's being taken over by an outside element, and that eventually you'll be priced out of your home.
Yeah.
And forced to move. It happens all the time.
And it happened in Brooklyn. It's not unique here, it's not unique to the country. I mean, it's the nature of growth in Sydney. Yeah, I mean,
your neighborhood, like Eric says, will become a little more up in arms, you know? So when they see a bunch of tourists coming through, it's like, oh, wait a minute.
The whole random plan with the stakes being dropped down on the streets. It represented that. But
yeah, sorry, you protect your neighborhood. YMCA? Yeah.
Do it.
Where is that sign? There it is. This is the Harlem YMCA, also known as the Claude McKay Building. And this was the very first YMCA. You guys, YMCA is an American thing, but do you guys know what the YMCA is? Besides the song? So this was the very first YMCA that actually allowed for black men to rent the rooms here. And it was a major deal. At that point, YMCAs were whites only, but since they were opening up one in Harlem, it frankly would have been bad business for them to do anything different. And it's had a number of sort of notable tenants. Malcolm X actually stayed here pretty much fresh off the bus from Omaha, Nebraska. That was one of the first places he stayed back when he was Malcolm Little still, instead of Malcolm X or Malcolm... What was it?
Shabazz. That
Shabazz.
Came later.
Yeah.
Little X Shabazz.
Little X Shabazz. and also the person that the building is named for, Claude McKay, who is a really fantastic Jamaican-born Harlem writer. He wrote primarily poetry and novels, and all of them very much concerned Harlem, concerned black life, African-American life. He lived in this particular YMCA from in the 1940s, very, very near the end of his life. At the time, he was just starting to really stop believing in communism, but for a very long period of time, Claude McKay was sort of known as the big African-American writer and the big communist African-American writer. He actually co-edited magazines with notable New York socialist Max Eastman. He made frequent trips to Russia, but of course, through all of that, he still maintained that he was not an official member of the Communist Party. He did not carry a card, but he made a lot of trips to Russia. But yeah, in the 1930s, he started sort of disbelieving communism, probably around the time that Stalin started really mucking it up. And after that, he became quite disillusioned to the whole cause. But near the end of his life, he did stay here, and the building is named in his honor now.
He wasn't a fan of Marcus Garvey and his separatist movement. He was also not a big fan of the NAACP's, you know, move toward a more middle-class existence either. So I guess that's where, you know, his socialist views kind of fit in.
Yeah.
Langston Hughes stayed here for a brief time in the 1920s as well.
Wow.